Welcome to Divorce Etc., hosted by us, the ex-experts. We're here to give you all kinds of information and tips on everything divorce. Plus, we're asking a lot of the questions that you may not even think of or know to ask, but we know because we've lived it, so we get it. We're Jessica and TH. Yeah, today's episode, we're doing a just us of some of our top tips for people when they are going through divorce, when you are starting to even be separated, some things that you should know when it comes to actually working out and working through your divorce agreement, and some of the kinds of things that you should do or not do when it comes to answering your kids' questions with a divorce. These are things that just come from my personal and TH's personal experience. This is, we're not therapists. We are ex-experts, real life experts. And this is based on our real life personal experiences. And we hope that you will get something out of them. We definitely want to hear your feedback. We'd love for you guys to also share with us what some of your best tips are in going through these things.
Absolutely. Okay. You want to start?
Sure. Okay. So we're going to start off with like, what are some top tips when it comes to actually going through your divorce agreement? So this may sound silly. Actually, I don't want to feel like I have to preface everything by this may sound silly because it's all about where you are in any certain situation. But I will preface this by saying that when I was getting divorced from my first husband, he was in the midst of an affair that had been going on already for at least 2 years. I had found out that my kids had already met her. They had already interacted with her. They had somewhat of a relationship with her to some extent. And my kids were only 2 and 4. And of course, they had no idea what was going on. She was just, you know, whatever, someone daddy's special friend. In daddy's life. That's right.
Yeah.
But I felt very possessive about the possibility of a stepmother and what my kids were going to call her or any other woman that was going to come into their life. And I think that it is important, whether or not these are your circumstances going through divorce, but if you are expecting that at some point there might be another parental figure in your kids' lives, it's not a bad thing to think about when it comes to your divorce agreement. So I literally have language in my divorce agreement that prohibits my ex-husband from allowing my children to call anybody mom, mommy, or any words that would be replaced with the idea of like of a mother. And I don't, for me, my kids never did. It really never actually became a conversation for me personally with my children. But I was hyper aware of the fact that it could get to that. And I had written that into my divorce agreement. So my first tip is like, it's something to think about.
If it's important to you, then you should put it in. But I do have a personal experience about that. And I'm going to add to it. It's not one of my tips, but I'm going to add to it. My ex-husband was with someone who wasn't Jewish. And I remember 6 months after separation, there was a Christmas tree in the house. And look, I'm all about Christmas and as many gifts as you can get. Kids love it. I totally get it. But I was freaking out. So in my divorce agreement, I put in that the kids are raised Jewish. And then as far as the mom thing, my son was like 5 and he was not feeling well and he was at his dad's. And the other woman was very sympathetic and compassionate to Jason. I don't know what that actually looked like, but it was more than what he was getting anywhere else at that moment. And I was not there. So he came back to my house and literally put his hand to his chest. So if you're watching, okay, all you moms, just take a deep breath right now. My son goes, I want to call her mom. I love her. He's 5.
Oh my God.
This is at bedtime, by the way, when all the shit always comes out anyway. I don't know what possessed me, but I took a deep breath and I said, I birthed you. You grew inside of my body. I am your mom. I am the only one who has earned that, you know, description, that name in your life. So we can think of a lot of other really great names for her.
Some of which we won't. I was going to say,
mom
some of which we won't say now.
Not one of them. So like you can put that in your agreement, but you can't really control your 4 and 2 year old from saying it but you can't, you won't know if he's encouraging it or not because you're not there. But if it makes you feel better, then put it in your agreement. But just know that you can't control what you're not controlling.
Totally. And I think that's an important point for everything. Cause one of my huge things is like, you have to learn to take a step back and not micromanage what happens at the other parent's apartment. But to your point, like, no, you can't control what the kids might call her when you're not around. But hopefully if it's something that is important to you and it's something that is in the agreement, your ex would be smart enough to not encourage that and to actively discourage that, because everybody knows that what comes out of kids' mouths get repeated in other places. And point, the religious thing, I too was in a situation where we are Jewish and she was not. And I did have in my agreement that they were not allowed to have a Christmas tree in his apartment, which I guess they got around because technically he ended up moving into her apartment and then whatever. But I was like, the kids are not having a Christmas tree. And I think I may have worked it out that like I had the kids most of the time on Christmas. So like they wouldn't be able to celebrate Christmas. and also I had it so that for any Jewish holidays, if he was not planning to actually celebrate the holiday in a traditional manner, meaning on certain holidays, that would include going to synagogue and going to services. On other holidays, it would include a specific type of traditional dinner. If he was not planning on celebrating the holiday in that way, by default, I would get the kids for that holiday. So if he was not going to go to synagogue for Yom Kippur, they were mine. If he wasn't having a Passover Seder, they were mine.
Did you have an age limit of when that ends? Because then kids start making decisions on their own.
I didn't have an age limit for when that ended, but I felt like obviously you're right. That does. But I think even around age probably 13 or even between 12 and 14, I think my kids definitely started having active decisions in terms of whether or not they wanted to go to services. And what I don't give my kids an option for, if we're having a Rosh Hashanah dinner, like we're having a Rosh Hashanah dinner and you're going to be there.
But if they're 20 years old and they are maybe away that week or something.
Yeah.
Or no, whatever, then like shit happens when they get older. That's what I'm saying. It's harder to control when they get older.
I'm fine with that. It was more about like when they are our wards, so to speak.
And they're in your home.
And they're in our home and we have control over what they are doing and where they are going. Yeah. That by default, I would get the Jewish holidays based on the fact that I would be displaying for them a traditional Jewish holiday. That's and that important. Was what I want. That's right. And that as young adults and as adults through their lives, they can certainly make decisions as to whether or not they want to continue those traditions.
Right.
But that would be the example that I would set for them when they were younger. So I do think the religion thing is very important and something that people should think about. And I remember you and I talking about that back in the day. My lawyer had not brought it up. I don't know that your lawyer had brought it up. So I do think.
But I saw the Christmas tree and I freaked out.
Right. But I'm saying like offering this right now is a tip for people to think about, because I don't think it's a traditional standard part of a divorce agreement.
Your religious practices, whatever that is, you know, just keep it in mind. And also keep in mind, really, my number one, well, I have a few tips, but Jessica's like making me think of another one. I mean, you really can't control what goes on in their home. It's a hard thing to get through, and Jessica and I will do another Just Us on that. But you just can't. I mean, you just can't. And so you can put stuff in the agreement, but I do remember I said stuff to my lawyer that I wanted in there. And she's like, this isn't going to stand up anywhere. This
like what kind of things?
This isn't worth us having a conversation about. I'm not even going to say it.
Oh.
It wasn't religion. It was like, you know, how many times they were around the other woman and stuff like that.
Oh,
I mean,
right.
I was afraid I was going to lose my kids. So, but those things don't really fly.
No,
we'll get into custody and custody experts and stuff like that in another podcast, because I had all of them. And you just be the best mom that you can be. And obviously this is for anybody with kids or anybody who knows someone going through a divorce who has kids. Like, you just be the best mom or the best dad that you can possibly be. and cream rises to the top, because we both separated more than 13 years ago and cream really does rise to the top. So,
and to go along with that, I mean, I think that, you know, you can't put in your divorce agreement like the kids have to go to bed at 9 o'clock, because you really can't micromanage what's happening at the, at their homes. But I do think that there are things that I had not put in my divorce agreement because I had not thought of them at the time, things that may not have even existed. Like my kids were literally 2 and 4. However, when my kids were 9 and above, there came times where the transfer from my apartment to Darren's apartment or vice versa became sometimes annoying on a weekend or whatever it was. And I definitely recall occasions where I would be told, if you want the kids to come to yours and you don't want them to be in an Uber by themselves or taking the subway or whatever the case may be, then you can come and get them.
Right.
And now I would then have to make the decision of like, okay, well, am I going to have to go and pick them up, or am I going to let him put my 9-year-old by herself in an Uber?
In a cab by herself.
Right. And so I do think that those are things that are worth putting into a divorce agreement. Like I wished at times back then that I had had something that would have said he had to bring the kids to me.
I think I had that with mine, that he was responsible if he had the kids for picking them up and dropping them back at the house.
Right. I think
that if there was a time outside of that, then I would have to go and pick them up.
But for you living in the suburbs, I think that the verbiage,
right, you get in a car and you go pick them up.
Right. But I think in the city, he was like, well, I can hire a car and I can put them in it. And that's me dropping them off. And like, it's semantics and it's literally, yeah, like,
so it's parsing. City and country though, really, those are very big differences.
Right.
One of my top tips in terms of a divorce agreement is to read carefully. Slowly, read it a lot of times. Make sure you understand what's written there. I asked 1,000,001 questions. I didn't care if I sounded stupid. This is my life, my relationship with my children, my financial stability, my health insurance, everything. So don't be afraid to ask questions. Read everything slowly. Your lawyer is there to make sure that it's clear to you. Your lawyer is not there to be your therapist, but your lawyer is there to represent you in a way that you understand how you're being represented. So that's the terms of your divorce agreement, because you know it goes back and forth. So once he has it, then it comes back with a lot of edits that you may not understand. And if you, like I was headed to trial. So I had pendente lite. Do you guys know what that means?
I don't know what that means.
And I had case information statements. And I had stuff that like normal people don't talk about. So you don't know what it means. So I'm saying is, so pendente lite is setting a precedent.
Okay.
So if this is how it's been for so many years, then this is how it will continue to be until the divorce is settled. So you've already set a precedent. So the time when we were separated versus the time our divorce became final was considered pendente lite.
Then stop, so hold, really, stop. Yeah. Because what you're saying is actually a bigger point than you think.
Yeah, I'm going to say it is number two.
Okay.
So make sure you understand everything that's written in there and all the questions that come back. And I brought up things that my lawyer didn't bring up and they ended up being in my divorce agreement and they ended up being rock star decisions because
mm-hmm. You give an example.
I was looking for a solution that she wasn't presenting to me and I came up with something and my father was there with me the whole time, but I was like, yeah, you guys didn't even think of this. And meanwhile, that decision has paid for my children's college.
Can you give an example for people?
So he was coming in. Well, this is, I don't want to get off track because we'll talk all about like convenient change of employment at the time of separation.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So that'll be a whole other conversation. But my other point is that what happens during your separation is very important
yep.
for your ultimate divorce agreement. So if you are doing visitation Wednesdays and every other weekend and your kids are healthy and great, guess what? That's probably what's going to fly for the agreement in the end. And if he's paying you a certain amount of support while you're separated, then you're likely to get that kind of support when your divorce goes through, because he's setting a precedent, or she is setting a precedent. I'm sorry, I don't mean to, you know, take sides. I'm only saying my side here from my experience. But if she's paying money to you for support until that divorce is finalized, then that's setting a precedent for what she is capable of doing for you financially. So just be very careful during your separation of the decisions that you make, because they will be or can be indicative of the ultimate divorce agreement that comes between the two of you, because my lawyer and his lawyer were awful to each other, and he was awful, and then I ended up being awful, and nothing was like progressing. And in the end, what we had through our separation is what we settled on for 4 years preparing for trial.
Right.
So that's my second really big thing. Separation and what happens then is important. So make sure you use your lawyer during that time, or divorce coach or financial analyst or whatever, to set it up as favorably and reasonably, you know, as you can, for yourself, for your shelter, for your home. So those are my top
two. Yeah. And I will say, just for the men out there listening, I mean, look, it is, I think, oftentimes common and customary to an extent where there's a separation and everybody, both, whether, you know, I want to say husband and wife, but again, doesn't matter if it's same sex, that both parents want the kids to be in as stable of an environment as possible. And so initially one parent may agree, as TH mentioned, to like less custody or less time with the kids, just to sort of not rock the boat. So they may say, yeah, you know what? The kids will primarily stay at this parent's apartment all the time, and I'll come in and I'll have dinner with them, you know, this night. And maybe then they'll only sleep at my house for the weekends because they don't have school.
There's so many different ways to do it. But now time is called parenting time. Now it's called visitation when we did it. Now it's called parenting time.
Right. But I'm just saying, like, I do feel like, and again, not to generalize, but I do feel like there are men that I know that kind of ended up getting screwed in a sense, because they wanted the best for their kids and they wanted their kids' lives to be not upended and have no upheaval in the beginning. And so they agreed that, yes, the kids can stay with mom most of the time. And that ended up being what ended up happening in the divorce agreement. And that wasn't what they expected. But I also want to say, this is not so much about setting a precedent, but another tip for your divorce agreement. And this is based on a conversation that TH and I had earlier, which is that it is very common that in a divorce agreement, if you are a partner that's receiving child support, over time at a certain point, and maybe at certain increments in your child's ages, the amount of child support that you're receiving will change. You know, you may be receiving X amount when they're this age, and then it might go up based on their expenses or private schools or whatever. And then it may go down as they get older and they're really out of the house more. And especially when your kids go to college, now they're technically not in your home. So the money that would have maybe gone to child support is maybe now going to college expenses. But here's the thing. If you are the parent who's receiving child support, and you know that when your kid turns 18 or whatever, that now your child support is going to be decreased, let's just say arbitrarily, by 10%, then you need to talk to your lawyer about whether or not what you're financially responsible for should also be decreased.
Because should reflect that.
That's right. If you're paying, if you get child support of $100 a month, and you know that you're responsible for 20% of the kids' expenses when it comes to music lessons, And now you're not receiving $100 of child support, but you're receiving $90 of child support. Maybe your 50% of responsibility for music lessons should now be 35%. It's a conversation that you need to have with your lawyer, because it certainly is logical that child support will be decreased in certain times of their lives and your life. But I think people don't think about necessarily the other side of it, which is if I have less money to spend on these things, then should I still be paying the same percentage that I've been paying all this time?
Well, and the other side of it is, what if the other spouse can't pay it? Then it's a conversation and it shouldn't be something that maybe continues. I mean, for me, what Jessica and I were talking about is college. So when at the time, I don't know how it works so much now in terms of planning, but the truth is, when your kids go to college, they're more expensive than when they lived at home. They're on a budget, you have tuition, you have books, you have Grammarly, $30 a month, you have the streaming stuff that they're going to have, you have technology that they need. And by the way, they need transportation to and from college, whether they're taking a bus or a plane, or are they having a car? Who's paying for the car? Who's paying the insurance? Who's paying the gas? Who's paying for the car? I mean, in my experience, both of my daughters are currently in college, and the expense of them traveling back and forth from school is insane. And for whatever, since COVID, you know, every airline's charging you for, like, I don't know, to breathe the air on the airplane at this point. So Jessica's kids were infants, and we did discuss college, and I had told Jessica, I'm like, you need to plan for college. Like, who's paying for college anyway?
Right. We put that in. This up. And based on that conversation that you and I had put in not just college expenses, but also if the kids go to college in a location that requires a flight, then he is responsible for 4 round trip tickets per year to get them there and back. Like, these are things I never would have thought about. So you do have to really plan ahead. I think I put something in there for the kids' bar and bat mitzvahs. And I think I even something in there for my kids' weddings. Mm-hmm. How much is he going to be responsible? I can't remember. Yeah. I feel like I may have, but for the bar and bat mitzvahs, for sure, it was he's responsible for X amount. And then anything over that amount was then split along a percentage way.
But you need to think about the future, especially if you have children, because, by the way, aside from college being exorbitantly expensive, even if they're on scholarship, I would take music lessons over college any day. What happens when they graduate college?
Are they going to graduate school?
And then you're back home. And now who are they living with? And then the food expenses, transportation expenses, insurance, I mean, work clothes. Look, a starting salary, let's say, is between $30,000 and $50,000 on average if you've gone through college, right? They can't pay for shit.
Right.
And then they're like, oh, I want to invest in Acorns and, you know, Robinhood and invest my money. Your money, you're moving back home. We got to figure this out. You want your eyebrows waxed? You want your nails done? You want to go to the dermatologist? You want your hair colored? Like, all I'm saying is, don't forget all of those expenses. And then when they're on their own, they are more expensive than when you had control over those expenses in your own home. Every month for 6 months, don't use my credit card. Don't use my credit card. It's only for travel. Why is European Wax Center on here? Oh, I'll pay you the money. I'll Venmo you. Don't Venmo me. I don't want you to Venmo me. I don't want it on my card.
Right.
I'm trying to stay on a budget. I'm trying to be responsible, and you're throwing me off.
Right.
So anyway, we can go on forever.
I know,
and
do
and ask us anything live event about this, but don't forget the future. They are children. Even when they're 22, and they are children, even when they're 25. And don't forget, when they're 26, they age out of insurance in most states. So then they have to go get their own insurance.
Right.
So plan for the future. Don't be naive and think, oh, you know, we'll address that. You won't address that. She or he will be remarried, maybe with a new family, or maybe they'll just be gone to South America and you'll be fucked.
Also, keep in mind, I mean, and it's very state specific, but I think the overall message when it comes to it is like, there may be a standard boilerplate template for divorce agreements, but some of the stuff that we're talking about is really in the weeds that your lawyer won't necessarily bring up to you because it's not standard. And it's the kind of stuff that may require, you know, more back and forth and more sort of infighting. And it just isn't the kind of stuff that they may say to you, well, who do you expect to pay for your child's, you know, the books when they're in college and the room and board and the plane tickets back and forth from the East Coast to the West Coast.
And they want to eat out on the weekends, by the way.
And if you have
Domino's on Thursday nights.
And they want to go on dates.
Alcohol.
But even just dating, they're in college and now they want to ask someone out and they want to take them to the movies or take them to a restaurant. And it's like, you know, who's giving your kids an allowance? Who's giving your kids, are you making your kid get a job? Anyway, like THA.
It could go on forever.
It could.
But just think about if you went to college, all the stuff you spent money on, they're spending it times 10.
Yes.
Just saying. Uber doesn't disappear. It grows every single day on your credit card. So just keep track. I would say my last tip is don't vent to your lawyer. I had a lot of situations where I felt like, you need to know how bad this is for me. And I would sit there. I was her perfect client. I would just spew shit in texts and emails and everything. You need to know this and write this down and keep track of that. You know what? Every single second of attention that they give you is a fucking fortune.
Right.
So get a therapist, call Jessica and I through the app or in an email.
Right.
And let's build this community of support for one another. So your money is there for you in your future and your money is there for your children. And your money is not wasted on lawyers. Like really, it's so hard, but divorce is a business. They don't really care about your emotional state. There are some who are compassionate, but still the compassionate lawyers will say, go find a friend.
Right.
So ex-experts are your friends and you can ask us anything. We'll do our best to answer. We are vulnerable and at a point in our lives where we're able to share our experiences and we've learned so much, not even just from one another, but from other people who have gone through divorce, that we have a tremendous amount of knowledge to share and put it on us. And we'll give you an objective, supportive place to be, but please don't waste it on your lawyer.
And if you think you can't afford therapy, I promise you that the cost of an hour with a therapist is far less than it's going to be for the cost of that hour with your lawyer, for sure.
Because it's never an hour with your lawyer, but it's never 1 hour.
They're billing you by like 10-minute increments or 15
minutes. If you think you were on the phone for 5 minutes, that was an hour.
Right.
That was clocked as an hour. So just, I think one more quick, oh my God, that dog looks like a pig. I thought that one was walking a pig outside. Sorry, go over your bills with your lawyers and anybody who you hire in your divorce process, any of the professionals, ask questions, understand why you're being billed a certain way. Some advice we got the other day is that if it's a low retainer, they might be upping your hourly charge. So make sure you just really ask a lot of questions. They work for you.
Right.
Okay. So
don't forget it.
You've got a certain amount of money and you want to spend it as wisely as possible. So keep track of the money so that it doesn't get out of hand if you don't want it to get out of hand.
Right. So we hope that was helpful for you. We have more Just Us episodes. As I said in the beginning, we're going to be talking about things when it comes to answering questions for your kids about divorce, things to be thinking about doing for yourself when you start off with the separation and divorce agreement. So be sure to check those episodes out as well. See you next time.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to Divorce Etc. with the X Experts. We really hope this episode was helpful for you in getting information you need and feeling empowered to get through it. And always remember, there are so many of us just like you. Now, please hit the subscribe button so you always get new episodes, and please rate and review us. You can also check out our website filled with free resources at xexperts.com. Follow us on social on Instagram and Facebook, and send us an email to let us know your thoughts or any questions or topics you'd like us to talk about. See you next time.